Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Treble Commons Podcast. This is Treble Commons Podcast number 121, recorded Monday, May 30th, 2016. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. The only topic on this edition of the Travel Commons podcast, TSA lines. Coming to you again from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, after rewriting an episode that I'd hoped to get done probably about 3 weeks ago. I'd even posted on the Travel Commons Facebook wall on May 1st about having a new episode the following weekend, a post I've since deleted. It seems to be that this is a trend with me. I get started on a new episode, but then it gets elbowed aside by other things like work. Maybe if I could just figure out a way to monetize this thing. Well, anyhow, I'd hoped to record this episode halfway between two European trips. As I mentioned in the last episode, I had a weird spring break itinerary in April right before Easter. Chicago to Reykjavik, Iceland for a four-day long weekend with my son. And then as he headed back to Chicago, I flew down to Spain to meet my wife and daughter and some friends for a week in Andalusia. As you can imagine, packing for that trip in a 22-inch carry-on required, I'd say, equal amounts of editing and physical force. And then in mid-May, we all headed down to Portugal for a week, the excuse being that we needed to shove all of my daughter's belongings into storage after her first year at university in Scotland. But we decided that Portugal would have better food and wine than Scotland. So we headed to Lisbon as a family, got all the way up to Porto and back. And then my wife and daughter flew back up to St. Andrews to do all the packing stuff. I actually think I came out of this whole thing pretty good. Where this episode got sort of shoved off the rails was the week before I left for Portugal. And we all know that vacations aren't free, that we pay for them, kind of the week before we leave and the week after. And I guess I was in blissful denial of this, what I really is immutable law of vacationing, thinking that I could write, record, produce, and post this episode in that week before going out to Lisbon. Well, as it turned out, I ended up cramming 2 weeks of business travel into 4 days. We were leaving for Lisbon on Friday afternoon. So that week's travel itinerary was New Jersey on Monday, Boston on Tuesday, New Orleans on Wednesday, and Atlanta on Thursday. So across four airlines, United, which was O'Hare, Newark to Boston, JetBlue, Boston to New Orleans, Southwest, New Orleans to Atlanta, and American, Atlanta to O'Hare, I racked up about 2 hours and 30 minutes in flight delays, with JetBlue being the only carrier without a black mark. Over April and May, what's been particularly awful has been my run on one of American Airlines' regional jet partners, SkyWest. One Monday in April, SkyWest lost voice and data connectivity at its Dallas dispatch center, causing a ground stop of all of its planes. After 2 hours of hanging around the Admiral's Club, watching my Newark departure time get pushed out every 30 minutes, I called Amex to get switched over to a real live American plane. Now, it ended up being an old MD-80, but at least it was flown by American, that ended up flying into LaGuardia. Now, it added about 45 minutes to my drive after I landed, but at least I got there, especially since SkyWest ended up canceling my original Newark flight. Now, the next Monday, I ended up on another SkyWest flight, this time to Charlottesville, Virginia. Again, another hour-plus delay. This time, it was plane maintenance. Then that Friday, I get a text after lunch. My flight home was delayed over 2 hours already, just at lunch, and this was a 6 p.m. departure. That was it. Three SkyWest flights in a row that couldn't get close to an on-time schedule. I called Amex again, got on a United flight out of Richmond, and after an hour-and-a-half drag race down I-64. I landed at O'Hare, drove home, ate dinner with my wife, had a couple of glasses of wine, all before my original SkyWest plane finally made it back to Chicago. Now, I'm not an airline ops expert, but when the women behind the desks at the Admiral's Club tell you that SkyWest, they're not our favorite, you might think about finding a new partner. We'll be right back. So following up, and I will tell you this is a long following up segment. The reason that there is only one topic on this edition of the Travel Commons podcast is that I am just going to ramble through sort of a potpourri of topics off the top of my head that have been sort of stacking up in my Travel Commons notes file on Evernote. Which, the first follow-up topic is Steve Frick asking me in a comment on the Travel Commons website about how I use Evernote. And in addition to using it to track topics or track ideas or thought for the podcast, in the last episode I talked about how I use it in my vacation travel planning. Now, I used to store all sorts of things in Evernote. I scanned receipts, I'd put recipes. Now I mostly use it for two things. Number one is for notes for this podcast, and the second is to store online travel articles using its Web Clipper Chrome extension, which I really like. A couple of days ago, I was reading a 36 Hours in Philadelphia article in the New York Times. I clicked on the little elephant head on the Chrome bar, and boom, now I had it saved, and it synced across all my devices. Now, I know a bunch of folks, work with a bunch of folks who are big OneNote users, and I've been thinking about using it, but I got to tell you, it's pretty low on my priority list since with my current usage, I'm good with Evernote's free tier. Peter Zurich sent in a link to a Onion YouTube video that I will post in the show notes about the Franz Kafka Airport in Prague. Now, the Onion is, call it talented, call it notorious for writing absurd articles in a straight voice that are just close enough to the truth that it makes people accept them as true. And a number of mainstream media outlets have been caught up by The Onion. Well, I'll tell you, this video that Peter Zurich sent in, it was really well done. Anyone who's read Kafka in high school or college will get a big kick out of it and kind of will remind you how close to Kafkaesque absurdity the modern travel experience gets. And actually, it was just close enough that it did make me look up the Prague airport. I mean, did somebody really name it after Kafka? I mean, no, they couldn't have. Well, as it turns out, as great as it would be, the airport has been named the Václav Havel Airport Prague since 2012 in honor of the Czech's former president and leader of the Velvet Revolution. Dan Gredwald dropped me a note regarding the I hate shopping for a suitcase topic in the last episode where I talked about my difficulties in replacing my worn backpack. Dan writes, as for the backpack search, Sarah, Dan's wife, feels your pain as she searched long and hard for a new backpack before settling on a Gregory for her upcoming trip on the Camino in northern Spain. Of course, her backpack needs differ from yours. For baggage, she's used the REI Tech Beast and loves it. She's had it for 8 years, still going strong with over 100,000 miles per year easily on it. She has not found an overhead bin it does not fit in, from a CR9 or an Embraer 170 all the way up to an Airbus 380 or a Boeing 747-400. Dan, thanks for that. I just got a couple of REI coupons in the mail, and so I'll have to run up to the store and check out the Tech Beast. Now, in that same segment, I talked about my smart luggage bag from Blue Smart. I think I summarized my review as meh. Yeah, sort of a nice enough bag, but, you know, kind of all the electronics felt more like a gimmick than something I really needed. I got to tell you, though, I'm going to backtrack on that a bit, specifically with regards to its location finder capability. Now, the bag has a GPS and global SIM card that, through a deal with Telefonica, it periodically transmits its location, which you can then see on the Blue Smart smartphone app. As I mentioned in the last episode, the Blue Smart is kind of the perfect carry-on size, so, you know, it's usually right above me in the plane cabin, so the location finder isn't all that valuable. Except recently, I've been flying regional jets a lot, to these damn SkyWest flights. You know, they just don't have the same overhead bin space, so I end up having to gate check what they like to call valet my bag. Now, normally, I don't worry about this. I've never had an airline lose my bag in that, couple of hundred vertical feet between the jetway door and the plane. But on one of these recent SkyWest flights, it was taking my bag a long time to show up at the gate after arriving. And I don't know. So I pulled out my smartphone, I hit the location button on the Blue Smart app, and it showed me that my bag had updated its location a couple minutes prior and was indeed here at O'Hare with me. A few minutes later, it showed up in the last tranche of bags that was heaved up into the jet bridge. Not critical functionality, but it moved it from meh to, hey, it's kind of handy. Which, I don't know, I guess would have been handy, but not necessarily useful in the string of bad luggage karma that my daughter and her friends have experienced over the past couple of months. My daughter's luggage has been lost on 3 out of 4 recent trips. Air Brussels lost it between Edinburgh and Madrid going through Brussels. KLM lost it on her return flight going through Amsterdam. And then Air France lost it when she was going home between Lisbon and Edinburgh through De Gaulle. And then a friend of hers had Iberia lose a bag between Seville and Madrid. I mean, now that one, I mean, how the hell does that happen? I mean, you really got to work hard to lose anything in an airport the size of Seville. And it's not that my daughter wanted to check her bag. She wanted to carry it on, but I don't know. She's got this short, light blue roller bag that seems to, like, pull gate agent eyes toward it. I don't know. I got to get her something more nondescript, like a black hard shell roller. But one thing that will catch you in Europe is that carry-on bags often have a weight limit as well as a size limit. Now, checking in for my WOW Air flight, I can't pronounce that airline regularly. I can't just say WOW Air. I've got to say WOW Air. If you saw the video, you'd see my eyes pop out when I say WOW. So anyhow, checking in for my WOW Air flight from Reykjavik to London, I arrived 2 hours before check-in to see what appeared to be, quite honestly, a stationary check-in line of a couple of hundred people. It was just going nowhere. Reykjavik is WOW's hub, and near as I could see, they had maybe 4 agents checking people in with luggage. And since they weigh each piece of luggage, there's no self-service check-in. I hadn't wanted to check my luggage since I had kind of a weird connection in London en route to Madrid. No interlining between WOW and Iberia, so I would have to claim luggage in Gatwick, pass through customs, and then recheck the bag with Iberia. So, I wasn't really excited about that, those mechanics. And quite honestly, checking in with a carry-on was a separate and much shorter line. So over I go. My bag fit kind of snugly in the sizer, so I figured I was good to go. Not so fast. You see, WOW not only has the baggage sizer, but they've got a 7-kilo, 15-pound weight limit for carry-ons. I mean, not even Spirit Air pulls that stunt. So I end up taking my bag off the scale, pull some clothes out, zip it back up, put it on the scale. Not enough, the agent says. So I end up doing this, 3-4 more times. Finally, the agent takes pity, or quite honestly, just gets tired of this exercise and gives me the approval tag to put on my bag, saying, "You shall pass." So WOW definitely likes to push the cute and quirky bit. She just let me pass, even though I still didn't get down to that 7 kilo, that 7 kilo mark. So I thank her. I take my bag and my armful of clothes, walk about 10 feet, and then open my bag and put my clothes back in. And then when I got on the plane, which was a brand new Airbus A321, my carry-on fit perfectly in the overhead bin, just like it does for every other A321, A320, A319, all those Airbus narrow bodies that, fly in the U.S. and Europe, every week. So I'm not quite sure what the WOW agent and I accomplished sort of with the baggage striptease that we went through, but I got what I wanted, which was my bag right above me rather than sort of trundling around Keflavik Airport for the next couple of days. Now, in the last couple of episodes, I've talked about the Revolut card, which is a MasterCard prepaid debit card with some really nice foreign exchange functionality. I mean, I loved this card when it first came out. First, when I was traveling in the UK, there I had a proper sort of chip and pin card. And then when I came back, my daughter was at university in Scotland, I was able to kind of very cheaply transfer money into her RBS, Royal Bank of Scotland account. However, I went kind of cold on them when they blew up the Cheaply component. I mentioned this in the last episode, when they added a 3% fee to every transaction when you used your U.S. debit card to add money, top up this their prepaid card. You know, I've gone sort of hot and cold on them. Now, this episode, I've sort of warmed back up a bit. First, I discovered a way to bypass that 3% debit charge. I end up topping up my account in euros with my U.S. debit card. Now, for some reason, this avoids the 3% charge from Revolut, though the app does kind of, you know, give you a warning saying, hey, you know, you're trying to use a currency different than your card is based in. Do you really want to do this? And I say yes, and boom, off it goes. And for me, my bank charges me less than 1% for that conversion. And though their exchange rate isn't quite as good as Revolut's, it's not bad enough to cost justify the 3% charge that Revolut's applies on top of the U.S. dollar top-ups. So, you know, we're back to some reasonably priced conversion in sort of a roundabout way, which was good because for some reason, my U.S. ATM card never worked the whole time I was in Iceland. And I could never figure out why. I traded notes with my bank. They weren't denying anything. They weren't ever even seeing the transaction show up at their end. I don't know. Maybe it was, you know, maybe it's some residual wonkiness left over from Iceland's banking meltdown. And really, I can't remember the last time I had problems like that, which before I left for Iceland made me wonder if I still needed to take out and carry a wad of backup U.S. dollars with me on this trip, sort of given how ubiquitous and seamless ATMs are nowadays. Now, I still didn't need to kind of break into my Jackson's because my Revolut card had no problem pulling Icelandic krona from my ATM. However, in Portugal, I hit a couple of different quirks with the Revolut card. First, the train and Lisbon subway ticket machines don't, for some reason, accept prepaid debit cards, which, you know, left me scrambling for exact change a surprising number of times. And then the second thing was is that a number of shops only accepted cash or Visa cards, which ended up blocking out Revolut because it's a MasterCard-based card. And now, it's funny, I used to see this more often in the past where shops only accepted cards on one network. And it was typically either a Visa on the Visa network or on the MasterCard network and usually never took American Express, which as a backup led me to, has led me to always carry one of each card. So I've always got a Visa card, a MasterCard, and an Amex card. And then I figure I got all the bases covered. But honestly, I thought the need for that backup had also faded because I haven't seen this problem as often. So I don't know. Just when I thought I was kind of going to drop some of these backup plans that I've been using for 15 to 20 years, I don't know. I ran into them on these past couple of vacations. So I don't know. I guess I'll keep carrying a fistful of credit cards and a wad of U.S. dollars for, I don't know, probably at least a couple more years. Hey, and if you've got any thoughts, questions, a story, comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com. You can always use your smartphone to record and send in an audio comment. Send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. You can post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, or you can always go old school and post them on the website at travelcommons.com. So after that run-on segment, we've only got time for one topic on this edition of the Travel Commons podcast, which is just clearly TSA lines. For much of March and April, I'd been traveling in and out of Newark pretty much every week, which I have to say, if you're using Terminal A, is the worst airport in the country. And I'd say it's in the top 10 of the worst airports on the planet. Now, I know that Terminal B in LaGuardia gives it a good run for the money with the ceiling tarps that are drained by garden hoses into trash cans in the middle of the terminal whenever there's a rainstorm. But I got to tell you, the TSA setup in Newark Terminal A beats that. So here's the logistics. They've split the corridor, the hallway that goes down to the gates. They've split it in two. The right side has the TSA stations. The left side is the line for passengers waiting to be screened and the walkway for exiting passengers. Now, the screening line is always a bit of a cluster. I mean, you can never quite tell which screening station you're waiting for. Maybe number three, or should I scoot around to get into line for number four? And actually, the really special feature of this configuration, what really wins at the prize, is that you often have to wait in line to leave the terminal. Yes, more than a few times, there's a TSA agent holding up a line of departing passengers because of the confusion in the screening lines. I got to tell you, it is just awful. Now, I just missed the TSA's Linemageddon in O'Hare. I flew out the Friday before, where 450 American Airlines passengers got to experience Camp O'Hare cots after missing their flights because of 2 to 3 hour long TSA screening lines. But you could see it coming. I mean, my wife had spent 45 minutes in line in March, and every Monday, the Monday morning rush hour had just become a jumble of lines, typically extending the length of each concourse. And with the summer travel volumes starting to build, I got to tell you, it was just a matter of when, not if, the whole thing imploded. And if I could tell this from my weekly flight out of O'Hare, you know the TSA folks on the ground knew it and were dreading it. So why didn't they get in front of this instead of waiting until after the meltdown and the screaming headlines to replace management and add staff? Sort of wading through recriminations about incompetence, baggage fees, gross misforecasting of pre-check signups, and the TSA calling out the general sort of cluelessness of infrequent flyers. I think a couple of economists got it right, get to the right answer in an article in this past Sunday's New York Times. The TSA, they say, has been acting as if there's no cost to tying people up for hours in security lines. In effect, all that time online is free to the TSA. And they continue, this glaring omission creates perverse incentives for government agencies. Cutting staff improves the agency's bottom line, while wasting citizens' time has little material consequence for it, aside from the expressions of annoyance and outrage in tweets and newspaper articles. I really think this pretty much nails it. I retweeted a link to a Quartz article with a pretty self-explanatory graph. Air traveler volume has increased more than 10% over the past 12 months, while the number of TSA screeners has decreased by more than that. Now, everybody knew this train wreck was coming, but there was no incentive to fix it until the train wreck happened, and then the volume of complaints and outrage became impossible for the government to ignore. Now, in the immediate term, the spectacle of those 450 filled cots at O'Hare, you know, spurred some good action. Congress let the TSA move some money around so that they could hire more personnel. The TSA head of security got sacked. Lines at O'Hare have shrunk. And a lot more people are ponying up the $85 for 5 years of pre-check status, which is causing a whole nother set of lines, but I'm not going to go into that. Now, in the short to medium term, maybe some new technology will help, automating checkpoint lines like they do in London Heathrow already, posting real-time queue lengths and wait times so that travelers can sort of self-balance the security lines. Those are some incremental improvements that ought to help and ought to make real impact. But I got to tell you, until the TSA explicitly considers the value of travelers' time, until we get to that point, that's only when we're going to get some semblance of sort of realistic balance between the cost and the risk of airline travel. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 121. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed in spite of the long gaps between podcasts. I apologize. Check out the show notes for music links. You can always find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and for Android users now in the Google Play Store or Google Music or wherever they're stashing their podcasts. If you've got if you've got a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or to MPeacock on Twitter. write them on the Travel Commons wall on Facebook, post them to the website on travelcommons.com, and you too will get to hear your voice eventually called out on this podcast. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments. As I always say, it helps. It gives me content. Even though it may not seem like it, it does shrink sort of. It ought to shrink the gaps between podcasts. So again, until we talk next time, and I promise I won't make promises that I can't keep. I promise I won't make promises. There we go. I'm doing well. Until we talk again, take care. Travel safe. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.